This is episode 222, recorded September 22nd, 2014.
Now that's pretty awesome.
I know, it's too bad it's not like 2222 for a year. That would be pretty awesome.
Well, no, but isn't that cool that we're
recording
episode
cool.
222 on the 22nd?
That's pretty good.
That's never going to happen again.
No, I guess it's not.
No, because we're never going to record episode 222 and...
Huh? Maybe, oh, we should do the math. It probably won't be there yet, but maybe we could record episode 300 on like the 30th of March or something.
Or episode 333? No, I don't know how that's going to work.
Yeah, there's no months with 33 days.
No. But maybe in the year 2033.
3033, we'll still be podcasting then, right?
Okay. Anyway, that was kind of fun. I didn't even do that on purpose.
I know, I didn't even realize it until I said it out loud and went, oh, that's cool.
How auspicious.
Indeed.
Okay, so.
So.
Who's joining us today? That's what I'd like to know.
Well, I'll tell you.
Okay, sorry, I wasn't trying to be insistent. I was just trying to be enthusiastic.
I'll tell you either way.
Okay.
Okay. We have Mike in Oregon, Matt in Perth, Australia, Greg in Jamestown, California, and Mick in Carnforth, UK.
Cool. Oh, you know what? Sean's in there, too.
Oh, you didn't
Sean
put
in North Carolina.
Sean
He's in there.
In North Carolina.
I just forgot to put him at the top of the page. Sorry. I'm not sure how I missed that. Okay. But he's in there.
Well, I think we're going to do the Google Voice message from Mike first.
Yes. That's so easier for editing purposes.
Let us take a listen.
Hey, guys. This is Mike from Oregon again. Hey, I listened to the last podcast you posted, and you mentioned not knowing the specific kind of Roomba liquid I have, which I forgot to mention that in the earlier discussions. The ones I have, the two that I have, once again, are male and female, and the two names they seem to go by is Yellow Lab or Electric Yellow. Those are the two names that I see attached to that fish that I have. I've been doing some research on the internet and on that specific species of fish, and kind of the vibe I'm getting is that that's one of the more mellow Moombas. There's actually, I did a search, and you guys may have seen this before. There's an actual chart that somebody put out that's pretty elaborate, and basically it's an African cichlid compatibility chart. And if you just put that into Google and do a Google image search, it'll come up. And anyway, so I was kind of using that, you know, to kind of see what might be compatible with the fish that I have. And it kind of surprised me. Actually, they say, according to this chart, that actually these fish are compatible with certain caps, which kind of surprised me because I thought that you weren't supposed to mix caps with the Moombas. So anyway, that's the kind of fish that I have. And I haven't made up my mind totally yet, but I'm kind of leaning towards, you know, because these fish are supposedly fairly docile as far as these type of fish are concerned, I'm going to try the two fish at a time because I really, as I said before, I just want to get females, and so I think that's the way I'm going to go, and I'm going to definitely do what you suggested on the decor. As a matter of fact, when I bought this tank, the guy gave me a whole bunch of like rocks and caves, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to add those decorations to what I already have. It just really makes a aquarium very densely, you know, populated with rocks and caves, so the new fish will definitely have a lot of places to hide, and it's really going to throw the fish that are already in there for a loop because they're going to have all kinds of different things to deal with. And so, yeah, I'm definitely going to do that. I'm going to try to make that transition as easy as possible, and hopefully it'll be okay. If not, I've always got the other fish tank. If someone's getting bullied, I can always transfer the bullied fish back to the other tank and kind of isolate it. So anyway, I just wanted to kind of let you guys know that's kind of my game plan, you know, and now you have complete information as far as the type of fish I have. Maybe you could provide some additional input. Once again, thanks for thanks for all the help, and keep up the good work. I'll talk to you guys later. Bye.
Okay. So a couple things. We had asked him previously to tell us what type of cichlid he had, because that often gives clues to the docility of the...
Or lack thereof.
Or lack thereof, yes. And so thank you for letting us know. And it's true. That's been my... the information I have on that sort of cichlid is it is fairly docile, as mbunas go. And so that's probably, you know, if you're going to choose mbuna to try that with, the method that you propose of, you know, adding a couple of females at a time, it's probably one of the better ones to do it with. So, good.
Let us know how it goes.
Yes, and I'm glad to hear that you've got a lot of those caves and rocks and so on that you can move around. And I think it's probably a pretty good plan.
And what was it that he said he might put them with?
Oh, it said... He mentioned that the compatibility chart, well, thank you for mentioning that, by the way, that he consulted, said that they could be compatible with certain kinds of haps, which is a short term for haplochromines, which refer to another type of cichlid in the lake. And this is a type of cichlid that rather than being concentrated in the rocks, as the mbunas are, you know, where they stake out territories and they stay there. The haplochromines tend to be more open water fish. And they tend not to be quite as aggressive. Well, I can't say that all of them are, you know, that way, but usually mbunas have the aggression, the advantage of, you know, higher degrees of aggression against haplochromines. That's what I should say.
And so generally speaking, you're not supposed to keep them together, but since the electric yellows are not as aggressive, they do okay?
Well, at least that's what the compatibility chart indicates. And they also have different needs in terms of foods and stuff. The haplochromines, as I understand it, tend to be more micro predators that you know, catch their food in the water, whereas the mbunas tend to be more grazers, and they graze on algae that has, well, aufwuchs, meaning algae with little bugs in it, basically. Little crustaceans and whatnot.
Algae bugs.
Living in it. So their diet tends to be kind of omnivorous, divided between algae and the little crustaceans. And the...
So they don't compete with each other for food, basically.
No, because they're in different areas of the lake.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're... Okay. Yeah. But anyway, there you go. I think that he has a pretty good chance of success. That Mike in Oregon has a pretty good chance at success because of the various things we've talked about. You know, the fact that they're fairly docile in terms of cichlids, which doesn't mean they're total teddy bears, but, you know, a lot less aggressive than some of the other cichlids. Like an electric blue, Johanni, some of those can be really mean. And others too, the Kenyai or whatever.
Which is too bad, because that's one of my favorites.
Oh, I love those. They're beautiful.
They are gorgeous.
But so are the yellow labs. They're really pretty fish too. And the fact that he has so much decor that they're going to be hiding in, and that he's going to be switching it around when he puts them in.
That will be
and
good.
That he has that extra tank, he can take the male out and give it a timeout if he needs to for a while.
Naughty boy.
Well, the females get used to the hiding places and they can kind of figure that out, and then he could put it back in a week or two later. And that would tend to decrease the aggression too. So I think he's got a pretty good setup.
Okay.
But we would like to hear how it goes.
Send us some pictures when it's all set up.
And hopefully your tank will be peppered with tiny little yellow babies.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
Okay, we have a short email from Matt in Australia. And he says, I went on to Amazon.com and sorted by highest average review in the fish and aquarium section. Guess who is number two highest rated? Ecology of the Planted Aquarium by your good friend Diana.
And that is pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. So I hope she listens right now. I don't know if she usually listens or not. But
I don't know. But you should all check it out, everyone. If you don't have a copy of that book, that's a good place to get it.
Yep.
It's pretty inexpensive electronically. So it's a good buy. And another thing, thank you to those of you who have been buying our book on live foods at the Amazon ebook library. We're continuing to, you know, make some sales there, so we appreciate everyone who's been doing that. Okay, so now it's the next one is Greg, right?
Yeah.
Greg in Jamestown, California.
Greg in Jamestown, California.
Oh, he's got some greetings for us in different languages. Look at that. Because we haven't done it in a while.
Is that what that is?
Yeah, remember how we used to do that?
Okay.
We haven't done it in a while.
This is, I know, because I'm lazy. I need to stop being lazy. This is the deal, folks. I usually read these emails cold. I haven't read them before because then I think of things to ask about them. Whereas if I read them ahead of time, then I've already asked about them to Russ, and so I don't remember to ask my questions. So I'm looking at Greg's email, pointing it at Russ while he's still talking, with trying to ask him, what? And you'll find out why, because this is what it says. It says, hello, mushy mushy, guten tag.
I think it's mushy mushy.
See? How would I know that?
I don't know. That's how Japanese people
answer the phone. It says M-U-S-H-I twice, and then it says goo. Tin talk.
You know, I don't know where that second one is from. But it's a greeting.
So thought I'd throw in a few since we haven't heard one in a few. Yeah, and I didn't know what he was talking about. Like, I thought maybe it was transcribed from a Google Voice message.
Oh, okay. And I did. Nope, he's just reminding us in a
mushy, mushy.
Gentle way. Is that how you say it? It's more like mosh, mosh.
Mosh, mosh. What's the I for?
That's how they write it. I don't know. It's a Japanese way to answer the phone.
But they don't write it in English. So why put an I?
Well, when they write it in Romanized characters, a romanization of Japanese.
But if they don't say an I, why put an I?
Well, it's an audible release sound.
Mush, mush.
Yeah, we don't want to get into it too much. But
okay.
Yeah, that's how they answer the phone.
Oh, it's good. Guten
Tag. Oh, I got
guten
it.
Guten Tag.
Guten Tag. Okay. Yep. German. Yes.
It's a clock made out of tin and it has goo on it. Oh. Guten Tag.
Yeah, my sister speaks German. Yeah, so that that works. I didn't even think about that. That's totally German.
Okay, I'll get back on the language bandwagon. We should figure out how to say fish in a bunch of different languages.
There we go. That's what we should do.
You know how to say my goldfish is doing fine and he's wondering why you never call in Japanese.
Yeah, we can remember how to say it.
You should think about that and see if you could say it for the end of the podcast.
Okay, I can say the first part really easily.
What is it?
The first part, my goldfish is doing fine.
Yeah.
Boku no kingyo wa genki desu.
Okay, now you just got to remember, and he's wondering why you never call. Because, dang, that goldfish is lonely. He's been waiting. You know, these other fish, they just never call when they say they're going to call. You think, I don't know.
I like to collect weird things to say. That's a pretty good weird thing.
One of the other phrases he likes to collect in languages is an ostrich has swallowed my arm.
We won't go into why.
Oh, come on.
Okay.
Okay. Anyways, he says, well, I know I didn't get scared by the unboxing, and I'm sure you got a few others writing, calling, or messaging this week.
Indeed,
I'm
glad
you weren't scared. I'm very scared.
Glad. Thank you, Greg,
I wanted
not being
to run
scared.
Away from myself from the unboxing. Okay, he says, I had some interesting things happen in the past 2 weeks. A few weeks ago, I started getting into shape so I could do some backpacking next year. This also includes getting the fish room into shape so someone else has an easier time of feeding than what I do now. This included shutting down a couple tanks and taking some plants and fish to the local fish store. With what I took there, I was able to get $49 of credit. While he was going through what I brought up, I of course started browsing what they had in stock. I had planned on just getting some quarries to make my schools a bit more rounded, but then I saw something I had been wanting, pygmy quarries. I ended up leaving with $0 in credit, but did have 5 coolie loaches to round mine to 7 and 15 pygmy quarries.
Nice.
Everything was great for the first 2 days, and I came into the fish room one morning and boom, I had dead coolies and 4 dead pygmy quarries in 1 tank.
Ouch.
Yeah, I was a little surprised since I had taken 9 large swordtails out and to the local fish store, so the bio load should still be less even with more fish. I didn't test the waters. I have never tested for anything but pH, but that was one time to see what it came out of the tap as. And he says, I know, I should buy a test kit. But as we all know with this hobby, just because it works for you doesn't mean it will work for me. Even without the tests, I've bred betas, guppies, bristlenose placos, Beckfordy, pencilfish, white cloud, mountain minnow, swordtail, cherry shrimp. Well, back to what happened. I finally figured out what happened. I was still feeding like I had 9 swordtails at 2.5-inch as long each in the tank, instead of feeding 15 quarter-inch corys. Since then, I've had no deaths that I've been able to see, but I can find only 7 pygmies at a given time. I don't doubt that I'm down to 10, but the tank is also heavily planted, and the quarries actually school with my autos also, so I have 4 to 5 that school and 3 that seem to be near the autos more, but group up every so often.
Cool. Well, I think that's a interesting point to bring up about, you know, water testing, how different people do it and how often and so on.
Well, and just that, you know, your fingers have muscle memory, too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's also
getting the same amount of food out.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't test very often except in what I would consider a high-risk tank.
Yeah.
Like a
it's
tank.
It's not like something that we do every week or anything.
No. I do it when I'm setting up a tank, like cycling it the first time. I like to test a lot. And, like, when I have tanks at work that are cycling, that I'm doing something with at work or whatever. You know, I have the students test the tanks every day because they need
to. Well, and that's part of their curriculum also.
Just to keep the fish safe and so they're not dying when they're
doing. And they're supposed to be learning about the cycle too, aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, so. That's kind of an incidental sort of thing, but yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, that doesn't mean that I test my tanks at home very often. If I feel like there's a problem and I need to figure out what's going on, I might do it. But if I don't see a problem, I don't really see like I need to.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Okay, he has something else for us. He says, I thought this was cool and wanted to share. I mentioned before that I've bred pencil fish. I had done it on accident in a planted 10-gallon tank that was holding them till a larger tank was ready. After I moved the fish, I left the tank alone for about a week. I was about to do 100% water change when I thought I saw something. That's when I found the fry, tiny, tiny red slivers moving throughout the roots of the duckweed. I didn't have any baby brine shrimp eggs or supplies to start a hatchery, so I ground some hikari first bites to finer powder, but the fry wouldn't eat it. Over the next few weeks, I tried several times to get them on the dry food, but to no avail. But I noticed that they were still alive, though not eating anything I put in. It reminded me of the interview you two did with that guy that set up a biotope and fed heavily for a month and then didn't feed for 2 months, I think it was. How the fish in his tank found enough to live off of, just like in the dry season of the Amazon. I started watching them a lot and reading more and more on them. Pencil fish are micro predators, though omnivorous. I watched them striking at things I couldn't see. As time went on, I got them onto dry food, but only saw a few of the fry. Then one day, about 2 months ago, I pulled a large pencil fish from the tank and put it with the adults, thinking I was down to 2 fry in the tank. I continued feeding to get the other 2 big enough to go with the parents. A week ago, while feeding, I happened to look in the fry tank, and I saw 7 total fish in there. I don't know where they were hiding, but I'm very happy to have more of them.
I love that.
That is really cool.
That is one of the fun things about keeping fish.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, there's something amazing about it when you have a situation like that, where you just suddenly see, mm-hmm. Oh, I've got fry. That's part of the fun. And the fact that you're not producing 200, so you can still keep what you produce, is kind of nice.
It's nice. It's, yeah.
You're just producing a small amount, but it's also very interesting that they were finding enough food in that, mm-hmm. in the tank. But the fact that you have, you know, a lot of duckweed at the surface does make sense. That all that surface area tends to attract, you know, little critters like not only infusorians, but little crustaceans like copepods and that kind of stuff that will live on the roots of the duckweed, and that's probably part of it. That they were probably feeding on the food. The little critters were probably feeding on the food that he was putting in. And then they were eating the wee critters, exactly.
Makes sense. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
He says, I can't wait to get my pygmy corys to breed. I'm also going to try to breed the coolie loaches. And did he send us a picture? It says?
Okay, I don't think we have a picture. I think that the rest of it is for the next contributor.
Oh, okay. The names mm-hmm. didn't get split up.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Greg. We're glad we didn't scare you off, and we're glad to hear about your pencil fish and hope to hear good things about your pygmy corys.
Okay, so we've got Sean next in North Carolina. Sean that sent us a picture?
Yeah.
Okay, and he sent us a picture of...
He's got a setup for his breeding of his celestial pearl Danios, and so he's going to tell us about it.
Okay, and we can put that picture up.
Uh-huh.
He says... Oh, he's talking about Walter worms first. Mm-hmm. He says, fishes liked them in the past.
Right, because he was asking me about Walter worms.
Yeah. He says, I had raised a bunch of fry on them, but then stopped raising them. Now starting again, obviously. I set up what I hope is a more efficient breeder setup for them. Some Java moss, which I expect to grow out, on top of an intake filter. The eggs get laid and whisked to the other side of the foam. Hopefully any fry that hatch on the adult side as well. Water returns right through the foam.
I really like the setup, and that's what he sent a picture of it.
Okay.
So the adults are on one side of it, and basically the filter's set up so there's a gentle current that pulls the eggs and the fry kind of over...
To the other side of the moss? Side. So the moss is like the tank divider.
Kind of. I mean, there's a big foam square there.
Oh, okay.
But the moss kind of grows on that, too. Mm-hmm. So the moss and the foam provide a divider, and then the adults don't get to the babies, because CPDs do tend to eat their babies.
Well, that's a cool idea,
Or their eggs, or whatever. So, yeah, it is. And we'll post the picture.
Okay. He says, I had a setup where I'd let the adults run around, and then I'd put a tank divider in, which is not as easy as this foam I just got. It was the old school plastic that rolled up. So he put the tank divider in and catch the adults after much effort and put them on the side away from the Java moss while I waited for them to hatch. This should be much easier. No adults to corral. So it's gradually moving my tank to a Southeast Asian biotope. I'm going to get some Dario, Rosy Loach, Cooley Loach, maybe. I loved these as a kid, he says. Micro Divario Cubitae, and maybe some Danio Chopre or Copre. Mm-hmm.
I don't know how most people pronounce it. I always say Chopre.
Okay. To go with the Celestial Pearl Danios. I'm starting to do more research on the plants. I really like the crypt, so I'll definitely have more of those. Now that the angels are gone, I just need to get someone to take the quarries. Saw three females running around with eggs today. They're a prolific lot.
Producing a lot of quarries. Yeah, that's fun. I really like that setup. I really, really do. And I hope to... Maybe if you get... some video of it, once you've got the adults in there and they start producing fry, you could show us how it's working. That would be fun.
Yeah,
that
would be neat. Mm. Okay, so we'll put the picture up, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, now we have Mick.
Mm-hmm. Mick in Carnforth, UK.
And he sent us a website.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll put that up as a link for everybody to go check out. He says, this is a great site. Lots of good stuff, and I just listened to a very interesting seminar on reptile nutrition.
And apparently it's a website. I haven't had a chance to go to it because we just got this today. But it's got
it says this one, pet webinars,
and it has the heading for this one says Fish and Exotic Pets for Children.
That would be cool.
So ties in nicely. Mm-hmm. Sounds interesting. I'd like to hear it. I will listen.
We have had the fair in town with lots of little bags of goldfish being sent out to children who have no tank to put it in. I suspect the toilets of Kendall have been flushing a lot more piscine deposits than usual this week.
Yeah. Poor sad, fishies. But I'm sure it's true. You know, we need to see if we can do that show with Mick that he suggested we do a while ago.
Touch bases with him again.
Because I like the goldfish / tank busters idea. We need to do that.
Uh-huh.
But I think it's important to let people know.
Speaking of goldfish, we had a sad thing.
Yeah, we did.
We lost Black-Eyed Susan.
Yeah. A fish named after a flower. But no.
It was actually a boy.
Yeah.
Because all the goldfish that we'd had that we named boy names all turned out to be girls, and so we got this one and said, let's give it a boy name so that it will turn out to be a girl. And so we did, and it turned out to be a girl.
Black-Eyed Susan?
Yeah. No, I mean, no, strike that. The other... You know what I'm trying to say.
Yes, he's definitely...
It's the wrong gender.
Was a boy. And we had had him for a number of years. I'm not sure exactly how much. Not enough to make him old by any means. Just kind of sad.
It's just making us not want to get fat-bodied goldfish anymore.
Yeah, he had a lot of problems with buoyancy.
He did.
And
well, you know, he was really sad after his last tank mate died. They were really good friends.
They were always swimming together.
They were always swimming together.
And it was never quite the same.
After Peychaud died, Black-Eyed Susan would go down to the place in the tank where the other fish died and just sit there. You know, like a person goes and sits at a gravestone. It was the saddest thing. He, there's no other word for it other than he was grieving. He was depressed. It was so sad.
That's certainly what it looked like.
And he just hasn't been the same.
And when we got our other goldfish, he definitely perked up, was more active. Mm-hmm. But they were never together as much. They would still, swim together and stuff, but not nearly as much as the other ones.
The other two just adored each other.
They're always swimming together and stuff.
It was very sad.
But we have lost him. And I do think that even though some people manage to do really well with the fat-bodied goldfish, and we've managed to keep a number of them for years and years, but they never last as long as the single-tailed ones.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we just might do single-tailed ones for a while. See how that goes. Because we've had single-tailed ones last long time. Really long time. Like well over a decade, which mm-hmm. I know goldfish can live a lot longer than that, but we've had a number of single-tailed goldfish.
Considering how often we've had to move.
Yeah. I mean, we've had a goldfish that for all we know is still alive that we had for years and years and years, and then when we left for Hawaii,
because we couldn't take it with us.
I mean, I had it when I was a teenager and it was still around, and we had mm-hmm. to take it back to the pet store because we had nowhere to put it when we went to Hawaii. So for all we know, it could be flourishing in a pond somewhere still.
I hope so.
But that would be, it would be like 22 years old or something, but that's not unheard of.
Well, maybe it is, because then it's episode 222 and it's the 22nd, so it could be 22 years old.
There you go.
That just must mean it's still alive out there.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Do we have anything else today?
I think
for
that's
our lovely audience at home,
I think that's it for now. But
Did you remember the rest of your Japanese phrase?
I'll slaughter it. I could say some of it, but I'll probably mess it up.
Okay, you practice it first, and maybe we'll do it next week.
Okay.
And I'll try and come up with a different language for next week.
In the meantime,
may the fish
be with you.